You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Ane Kate Sullivan. Ane has committed her life to writing, poetry, fiction, and nonfiction, based on transformational experiences and her use and understanding of colors. She is able to make the ethereal tangible by providing accessible and simple ways to help any person discover their true self. With a master's degree in spiritual psychology and a doctorate in literature earned between Columbia University and King's College London, Ane has amassed a wealth of academic knowledge that perfectly complements her life's passion and pursuit to help heal, strengthen, and empower people all over the world. She recently published the first three in a series of children's books that she had originally written for her now adult daughter to help her learn to read, overcome bullying, and live from the truth of her heart. The Sparkle series, as they're known, are vibrant books, longer, fable-like versions of children's books that have had a profoundly positive effect on kids and adults alike. You can find out more about her work and her other books at her website, www.anekatesullivan.com. So let's welcome her to the show now. Hi, Ane. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just about over my flu bug now. I had a little flu for about 2 weeks.
Oh,
but
my goodness.
Thankfully, it's leaving. You know, it was really nice to meet you. I don't always share on the air about how guests come about, and sometimes it's quite by chance, and it's very opportunistic. And I was in Ojai at a talk with Penny Kelly, one of my favorite authors, who's been on the show, and she's actually going to be on the show next week, and with my friend Randy, and that's where I met you, and you were sharing your Sparkle series books and 3 Days in the Light, and I just thought, and you and Belle were there. Belle's your illustrator, right?
Yes.
A wonderful person, very interesting, very colorful, and beautiful work. I mean, the Sparkle series is just beautifully done. So I was very fortunate to have, you know, bumped into you and be able to get those books so I could have you on the show.
Oh, well, it was delightful meeting you, and we had a wonderful time with Penny Kelly.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't she an interesting person?
I really enjoy her.
Oh,
her,
I do,
all
too.
Of her work with the elves. Very magical.
Oh yes, that I when I first started reading her books on the elves of Lily Hill Farm, I think it was. It literally blew me away. It was a paradigm shifting book for me because I had never read anything like that before. And it's a fascinating story, and she's definitely got some wonderful material out there.
She does. She did a wonderful ceremony with us here in Ohio to call in the rain.
Oh, did it work?
Maybe we all need to learn from her to speak to the elves so that we can sort out this drought.
Oh yes, yes, that's important. That's important. Maybe I'll ask her about that when she's on the show.
That'd be great.
You know, because we're having the drought up here in Northern California, and it's getting worse, and you know, it's spreading all over the place. It looks like people may be starting to move out of certain areas that look like they are not going to be able to have water. So,
yes,
we can work with the spirits and the elementals and nature spirits and we can turn that around.
It's important. It is important. You know, we laugh about it because as children we do these things. You know, in the Sparkle series, we go out and talk to fairies. But when Penny Kelly was here, we literally went out and talked to the invisible realm, that loves us and supports us and could feel it so close. And, you know, maybe that's part of what's going on, is it's a cry from spirit to say, hey, tune in, check in, work together.
Well, it seems like it's time for us to unite with the invisible realms.
Yes.
You know, we've taken a divergent path for quite a few decades, and that doesn't seem to have produced a lot of positive results. The pursuit of wealth and material things has certainly wreaked a lot of havoc on the planet. So maybe it's time for us to align with the invisibles.
I think so. You received my book, 3 Days in the Light.
Yes, and I wanted to ask you about that because that's an amazing story. It's a story about your experience with cosmic consciousness, and it's called 3 Days in the Light, and you have poems written after the experience, which are quite beautiful. I mean, I told you before the show that I don't usually pay much attention to poems because I just either don't get them or my attention span is too short, but yours are quite wonderful.
Thank you.
Would you like to share a little bit about that experience that you had and how that changed your life?
I would love to.
Oh, good.
That experience happened here in Ohio in 2011, and I was with another really amazing man. I don't know if he's been on your show, called Howard Wills.
No, not yet.
And I'd been working with him for some time, exploring, as we like to do with the Penny Kellys and the interesting people of this world, explore. And he asked me if I really wanted to meet God face to face. Well, of course I want. You know, this is a dream and a calling, and yes, it was a big, resounding yes. And then he asked my husband if he would look after my body while I had this experience, which, you know, caused a little bit of concern.
Right.
I was still very eager. And I trusted Howard, and I trusted my husband. So what happened is they set up an experience. I haven't taken any drugs since I was 28, so that was not involved. It was absolutely an experience with the light, which was similar in some ways to a near-death experience, various near-death experiences I've heard about. Mm-hmm. What happened for me is that there was a tug on my body-mind complex. I could feel it, like the actual field itself. It's interesting because we get so identified with this structure that's actually not particularly real. So what happened was that it started to dissolve, and you know, I could feel myself grappling because that's how we navigate. Right?
Right.
Generally speaking. And I could feel my parents pull towards me, and I had to release every member of my family so I could actually have this dissolving experience. And once that happened, I merged with the light for 3 days. That's the name of the book, 3 Days in the Light. And I had no sense of time. But once the body-mind pattern was gone, I just merged what was left of the eye, merged with this loving intelligence. And what's so wonderful about it, and we've heard it before, but to be in that experience, there is a force, there's an intelligent, loving force that loves us beyond belief. And it knows every galaxy in space, it knows every blade of grass, it knows every little tiny cell in our hair. And it loves all of it, and it brings it into being. It cares for us as we come into form, and it cares for us as we go out of form. And as part of that, we're eternal. So that was remarkable. After the 3 days, my husband was getting worried that I might never come back. So so he started insisting that Howard do something, and they actually gave me meat, which is interesting because I had been a vegetarian for 22 years. But what that did was it shocked my system. And I came back through And it felt like 10 vessels. So the vastness of the light itself became one vessel of light, and then another, about four vessels until I actually started to feel a sense of I again, and then back into my original form. Later, I realized that it absolutely follows the Kabbalistic tree of life, my experience of my reentry. The other thing that happened when I came back in was that I saw humanity really differently. I think on the way out, I had thought of people as a kind of scourge on the earth, messing everything up or causing problems.
Mm-hmm.
When I came back in, I really saw every single being as this beautiful mandala who was really doing the best they possibly could. And humanity was so beautiful, so completely beautiful. And, you know, for a few days, I just lay there in awe, just the beauty of the planet that we live in, the gift of life, the fact that we even get to be here and have this experience. And then at that point, I started writing these poems. There was nothing to do but write at that point, just try to write something about this gift of grace. Yeah.
Were you able to have dialogues with the light, and did you ask all the questions that you always wanted to ask?
Well, what happened was that because the body-mind complex dissolved, does that make sense, the body-mind complex?
Yes.
So our ego, our personality, because it
right.
dissolved, there wasn't anybody to have a dialogue with.
Right.
It was just
right.
part of this greater intelligence. What's interesting, since I've come back, though, and I have reformed my persona, is now I can have dialogue with the light.
Ah.
And it's ongoing. Ah. It's an ongoing dialogue. So what's happened is, since 2011, I think I've written six books. And all of them have elements of this experience, the light that resides within us,
mm-hmm.
something about the mythos of creation.
How does the idea of people doing evil get reconciled in this vision of beauty? I mean, I'm talking about the people who are seriously who know what they're doing and
perpetrating evil. So,
right.
So it's an interesting thing. What I saw was that on this planet, for whatever reason, a certain amount of evil is permitted, and it's actually permitted for our growth and evolution. When in that loving intelligence merged with it, what's interesting mm-hmm. about it is it's completely neutral. It's a neutral force. So it's not worried about what happens because it knows everyone's taken care of. So from that perspective, it makes a lot of sense. From our human perspective, we say, what? You know, this is terrible.
Right.
But everything seems to be designed for our growth and evolution. That doesn't mean that it feels great, necessarily.
Right.
But, yeah, there are forces, and it's nothing compared to the force of the light. It's minuscule, but it does play out, and you know we're little creator beings learning how to navigate and how to find all of our qualities, to find our curiosity, to find all of our different strengths and powers, and living in a dualistic plane, we get to basically discover who we are and become stronger. And so ultimately, we can be more and more like this greater intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, it makes sense, you know, that we would be moving, ideally that we would be moving closer to an alignment with that energy.
I think so. And the other thing that I really saw and it became really clear is that we're moving into an era of light, that we've actually been in this era of darkness for some time, the Middle Ages, for 2,000-year Middle Ages. So but we've made a shift, and we're actually returning back into a time of light. So we're kind of expecting a renaissance at some point of light. And the other thing that's being released is the feminine energy, which hasn't really been fully allowed to blossom on the planet, the Mayans say, in 5,125 years. So if we look back to the Celts, we can begin to tap into some of the goddess stories and bring them forward. But it's been a long time since the feminine has really fully blossomed here. And I'm sure that will be part of this new renaissance that's coming.
People, I've had many guests that talk about this, and of course, the most common name that is used for it is the shift or the ascension process. And there's also the idea that we're now tilting into the golden age, that we're headed towards a golden age. So we've moved out of the darkest of the dark ages and are now kind of just peeking into the window of a golden age, which is supposed to be showing up in the near future. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think it's the dawning. The song, The Dawning of the Age of Aquarius.
Yeah, right.
I think there is a dawning, and people have seen it. I think people have seers. I remember loving Sir George Trevelyan's work, so many people's work, you know, who have talked about this. But it does seem that it's happening, and of course, you know, there are many, many things that are happening on the Earth, you know, right now. But if we can stay curious and particularly curious about our own evolution, that's how it starts. And this intelligence is really about life and supporting life. It's not about death and destruction and competition and, you know, war. It tolerates it. It does tolerate it, which is interesting. It's neutral about it. It lets us do whatever we want to do, so we have free will. But if we become more like that greater intelligence, I didn't experience it as having a gender. I mean, in its vastness, because it's so vast, it feels feminine. But it's so exact that there's a masculine element to it. So it's genderless. But it's a huge cosmic intelligence that loves, and it's something that we can tap into at any time. I mean, I don't know if you feel it. Just as we talk about it now, you might be feeling it.
I often do. It's just an awareness that just pops in, and then there's a presence.
Yeah, I think that's how we start to know it as exactly as you said, as a presence. That's always there.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the life affirming part, and I know that many of us are living lives that are on an organic path and based upon the premise of doing no harm, and yet there's a trillion-dollar industry that's building up on the backs of wars and arms manufacturing. I just noticed today that a new cannon, some kind of electronic cannon, is being built that will be able to lob some kind of artillery 110 miles, and the Defense Department has all kinds of nanotechnological devices, and there are all kinds of things that are just being unveiled because they're like kids in the candy store. They can't wait to find the best, newest way to destroy other people and human beings and our life force in our cities.
Mm-hmm.
It seems
if we really look at the history of Earth for a while,
yeah,
there have been wars going on ever since we've been here, as far as
since the beginning.
I've done past life memories, you know, as far as I can go back, there are wars. We're just the technology is improving, so we're getting scarier. But that's been part of the consciousness here for some time. And I think when we start talking about the dawning of the new age, it doesn't mean that there's not technologies that could wipe out the Earth. There are. But that there's a new intelligence that's awakening within us. so that mm-hmm. hopefully we can learn how to use these technologies with a little more intelligence. We do have the possibility to destroy the Earth, but there's an even greater possibility, which is what about living here fully and completely with complete awareness and helping each other blossom and thrive and grow?
Well, that would be my choice.
that would be really wonderful. And if we don't, and we blow it up, and we mess up, the thing is, the story, what I really came back with was some peace, because I went, you know, whatever we do here, it's an eternal story. It just keeps going. You can't really die. You can't.
Right.
You can build a factory. The Earth is going to outlive the factory. The Earth is going to outlive the plastic bags floating in the ocean. You know, it's such an we get this sense because we're only here 80 years or 100 years, whatever. That, and it's a short party. It's such a short party, and there's a vastness that we could really tap into a bit more. And I think it requires a little bit of humility to tap into that.
Definitely, and human society is not built on humility.
No, but it's actually, it's interesting because it's a key. It's a wonderful
key.
Yeah,
yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and you know, being in nature and just experiencing the awe of it, that brings about humility in a natural way.
Had the most wonderful experience day before yesterday. I went out kayaking and up off Santa Barbara, and a stingray and her baby glided right under the kayak that we were in. It was like watching an eagle in the water.
Wow, beautiful.
There are these magnificent, truly magnificent sights that happen right here where we are all the time. You know, every sunset, I think that's what I really came back with, was, gosh, you know, every moment is really precious. You know, and each person really, whether they know it or not, they're a precious pearl. They might not know it, but they are underneath all the stories and so forth. But just, you know, and you look outside and you think it's the same, but if you walk that same path every day, the leaves are different, the smells are different, the sunsets are different, sunrises are different. It's an ongoing art show.
Definitely. And, of course, you do work with color.
So I do.
You would be especially aware of that.
Absolutely. I was fortunate enough. I went to England. I got an overseas. This was really fun. When I was in my 20s, I got an overseas research award to go to study at King's College London, which was fabulous opportunity. So I went, I got a degree in literature and with an emphasis in Celtic mythology.
Ooh.
I got paid to go around and explore all of these amazing sites, Stonehenge, Airbury, and Glastonbury, and the Western Isles of Ireland, and up into Scotland and so forth. So I started amassing these terrific stories. And one of the people that I ran into reminds me a little bit of Penny Kelly, actually, was this woman that was a blind woman. She actually asked me not to give her name out, so I won't, but she's crossed on now. But she actually read people through color. She understood people through color and read them through color, and she helped people tap in through their colors. And I thought that was just the most fantastic thing. It was up in the north of England, and I would go up and just sit in these rooms of colored liquids and stare at them and hear tones, and just knew that they had some story they were trying to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually went up back and forth for about 10 years, really, really learning the system and downloading it. And I work with people here now with it. It's kind of a mystery school tradition based on Kabbalah and the Tree of Life. But it is definitely a way to start to tap into your soul's calling, your life purpose and mission, how you blossom, and how you live into your wild, unique self.
mm.
It's wonderful work. It's rare. It's a rare thing. It's not something that happens often. But when people are ready for it, they come.
Did you have any mystical experiences while you were there? I have some Welsh blood. I've never been to Ireland, but did you experience anything otherworldly while you were exploring these sites?
I experienced so many otherworldly things. Those places are so active. One fun thing. I went to the west of Ireland, and I was working on the plays of Lady Gregory, who was she was the force behind the Irish literary Renaissance. I was really curious about her because she was a really strong woman who went into Trinity College and said, "Look, you guys are teaching Roman and Greek gods, which belong to another country. We have Celtic mythology right here, and we need to reinstate Gaelic in the schools, and we need to relearn our Celtic myths." Mm. And she went around in her little pony and trap with the poet W.B. Yeats. So he's the one that actually made them famous.
Wow.
And called back the mythology of those isles. And what's interesting about Ireland, particularly the west of Ireland, is that it was the last stronghold of the Anglo-Saxon invasions and the German tribes and the Vikings that came in and even the Roman forces. They didn't really make it there. Finally, I think it was Elizabeth I wiped them out. They had a pretty good go of it. And so when you go to those places, that's where you can really find the remnants of the Celts. What I really love about the Celts is that the goddess is very alive in those traditions. Because if in the Judeo-Christian myth, a lot of the world is still involved in patriarchy, and when you go and you say, as a woman, a female scholar, where do I belong in this? I don't fit. I'm female. But going there, I had this deep sense of relaxation. So one day I'm sitting there, and I had this sense. It was funny. I was sitting by Cool Lake, where W.B. Yeats had written some of his famous poems, and I was really relaxing into the land and feeling the wind. The way the wind blows there is interesting because it's every second the weather changes. Suddenly it will be raining, and then it will be clear, and then the wind will blow, and the trees will rattle, and so there's a lot of movement. And so I'm sitting there just really quietly at Cool Park, thinking there would be people. Nobody's there at all. And these two big bubbles float past, like orbs. They look like big orbs. And I'm looking at them, and I'm in my 20s. I hadn't even heard of any of these things. And I'm looking at them and blinking, and I can see they had like little like fairy forms inside of them, and they turned and looked at me, and I looked at them, and we all seemed kind of startled for a second, and they giggled, and they moved on, and I was stunned. I was completely stunned.
Wow.
I was like, "What? They're real."
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow.
They're real. My gosh, I just saw fairies. So, I guess there are these places where the realms are, the veils are thin, and supernatural, we can tap into the supernatural.
Wonderful.
So, which is where a lot of myth and legend comes from.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, which, there I have a lot of different stories, but I think what was happening for me there was in both Glastonbury, which is in the south of England, where there's a famous well there called the Chalice Well, where the chalice was meant to be kept. I was starting to download these stories of the goddesses, and I'm working on a book on it now, come out next year. And we're getting ready to run a series of workshops. And what I was doing was tapping into these through dreams, really through dreams and visions. I would dream, and they would come to me with a name. My name is Cesare. Look it up. Here she is in the Book of Invasions. Not much about her, except that, my goodness, look at this. She was the granddaughter of Noah, and she wasn't allowed on the ark.
Oh, interesting.
So I got really curious about this Caesar and what happened to her. And it turns out that Caesar decided to build her own ship and listen to her own vision and set sail to Ireland. So, and made it, actually, with 50 women and 3 men, including the poet Fintan, who recorded the adventure. So those Emerald Isles were settled straight away by the goddess and by the poet. So, but these are some of the stories that I feel, especially now with this emerging feminine that's happening. I know there's a lot in the paper about rapes and abuse and dishonoring of the feminine that's going on, and I think we also need to remember it's gone on for a long time. The wonderful thing about it is there's more awareness that's happening.
Right.
But one way we can start to work with it is to link to these wonderful goddess archetypes that survived all kinds of things and still are empowered. So Caesar is one of them. She's a very self-empowered goddess, and there are others like Danu, who's one of the great mother goddesses. And what's wonderful about some of these great mother goddesses is you can't defile them. It's like Mother Mary. You can throw any projection on them you want to. You can yell at them. You can curse them. You can try to hurt them, and they, for thousands of years, they remain the same. They're very, very steady.
Mm-hmm.
In their love and in their acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
So Danu is one of the accepting presences. And as you go to these different places, when the Celts were alive, they each spring and each well had a goddess that was worshipped there. That would be, that was honored because it had to do with the flow of life, and they knew that water, in particular, was connected with the flow of life, and also there would be portals there to the underworld. They called these people, if you went through the portals, they called these people the She. Have you ever heard of those people?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's spelled S-I-D-H-E, and they were known as the Tall, Beautiful People. I would say in New Age circles, people would say they were the Atlanteans and the Lemurians, probably the Atlanteans.
Okay.
You know, who had come, who were now residing in a slightly different realm, and aged much more slowly. Other people, over time, they became the fairy people.
Mm.
And so when you went to these places, to these wells, to these caves, there was a way to sit with yourself and to sit with something greater than the personal self, and to begin to tap into that and feel it, and to call on a power. Let's say something difficult happened in your life, you're going through a divorce or an illness, or someone close to you has died, or some kind of difficult, challenging situation. You can go to these places and pull on that force, that source, to help you understand that story, the archetypal story that you're living into.
Mm-hmm.
And so these myths and legends are really designed to help us navigate these things. So yes, these things happen to people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how when you're not allowed to go on to Noah's Ark, and you have to build your own ark even though you don't know how.
Well,
these are the forces you call upon to learn in a few days how to weave a roof and build a hall and learn to navigate the stars so that you can go to the land that's calling you, or how to continue to converse with those who have moved on to another dimension.
Interesting. Is there a lot of material on the goddesses, as you said, or are you putting together something for people to digest?
There's some work on the goddesses. There's Caitlin Matthews, and there are a few other people. I think my work is similar in some way to that of Dr. Bolin, who mm-hmm. wrote Goddess and Every Woman.
Okay.
She's a Jungian analyst who uses the archetypes in her therapy sessions. And she has done a lot of work with the Greek goddesses. And I really love her work. I love her. I think she really also likes my work. But what I'm doing is different from the Greek. The Greek archetypes, in some ways, can relate. There's a Ymir is a Celtic goddess who's in some way similar to Aphrodite, and they're different goddesses. I would say like Hestia in the Greek is very close to Danae in the Celtic version, and they're goddesses in the Celtic tradition that are not in Greek. You can't find them in Greek and Roman because it's still a patriarchal culture. So we're going back to a matriarchal culture. And there are many, many more faces. They're wrathful goddesses. And the wrathful goddess is important because she destroys what's not true.
Mm.
So she's a very important, like Kali in the East.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain goddesses who would teach warriors to become ferocious. There's one named Satach, who's a really wonderful character. You have to jump a 22-foot ravine in Scotland, and then when you land in front of her, she'll look into your eyes, and if you're a hero, then she'll let you live, and if you're not, she kills you.
Right.
There's some intense ones. And then there are goddesses of the hearth and goddesses of the spring and goddesses of childbirth and relationship. So, you know, I think knowing who's on your council is helpful,
mm-hmm.
because if you're in a relationship with someone, you might want to call on the more relational, more vulnerable goddesses.
Mm.
Whereas if you're out in the world and for some reason you're under attack, you might want to call on somebody else who knows how to tai chi the situation,
mm.
and not be hurt by it. So those are the impenetrable goddesses.
Oh, yeah,
and they're mother goddesses. You know, we kind of have forgotten in our culture how important motherhood is. You know, we've gone more towards the Artemis type, or actually even more Athena type goddesses, who are the sky goddesses,
mm-hmm.
who rule the mind. You know, if you're at university, like I was, Athena accompanies you there. But if you're with Athena and you come back home, your husband might not be interested in you. You know? So visiting these sites, you say, oh, I'm going to call on Ymir or Etan or Fand or some of the great beauties.
Hmm.
Do you have connections with these? Have you walked these aisles, or are you familiar with these stories?
Not really. I mean, when I was studying English years ago, I was more familiar than I am now. So I'm not conversant with them, no.
So I've written them for adults, and the Sparkle series are for children of all ages. They're the most accessible. Did you have a look at the Sparkle books?
Oh, yes, I love the Sparkle books. Well, I have one of them, and I thought it was absolutely delightful. And
Bell's done an amazing job with the illustrations, bringing each
oh
character to
God.
Life. It's just been such a fun process. I write these wild stories down, and then she's really grounded them. And you know, just to see the face of the person and the color of the hair and the eyes come forward, and
uh-huh.
and you know, see the clothes they have on, and now there's we have five stories now. Sparkle, we have a whole family. You know, Sparkle has her mother quite often tells stories, or sometimes her grandmother tells stories, or her father. And they're in that lineage of the oral storytelling. So I think it's really important. I mean, for a minute ago, we touched on evil, you know?
Uh-huh.
And how do the kids now, I mean, once upon a time, we could protect them somewhat. Now they can go on YouTube and watch anything, you know?
Right.
And how do you counter that? When the kids come home and go, my gosh, you know, a plane was just shot out of the sky. How am I supposed to deal with that? You need characters to call on. And I know a lot of kids who sleep with sparkle books under their pillows because they say, you know, I know I'll be fine because I have my sparkle books. I know who
wow.
I am. I know my light.
Wow.
I can never be lost, you know.
Well, I have sparkle in the light. And then I think the day after the night we saw Penny, Randy and I went over to visit Belle. And she showed us some of her newer illustrations that she's working on for one of the coming books. And we had a wonderful chat. She's a fascinating person. And her work is just absolutely beautiful. I mean, she's just really captured the essence of what you're, you know, what you're trying to convey here. So I love it. I really do.
We've had an amazing ride together. I don't know how many people listening are interested in writing a children's story. It seems like everyone I talk to say, I'm working on a children's story. But it's really an incredible process because each book takes about a year. Not so much for me to write. And when I write them, they come through fairly quickly, but they evolve. You know, you'll have a first draft and second draft and so forth. And as I'm working on the drafts, you know, she's anchoring these characters with trees and leaves and, you know, skies and pathways and but it does take a year. And the thing that's interesting, it's a little bit like you were saying earlier, did you have mystical experiences, you know, in the wells and the springs when you were walking in the stones?
Mm.
Writing a book is a mystical experience because as we're working with each part of the story, we're really living these. We're embodying.
Right.
We're actually embodying
That's right.
the stories. And Belle and
right.
I have just learned to kind of laugh and go, oh, gosh, well, you know, actually right now we're drawing the dragon, so of course this just happened, you know.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
There's bound to be dragons flying around your life somewhere.
There are dragons. The story we're working on right now, I've written five. Three are done, and this third one we're still working on. We'll bring it out soon, very soon. But it's called Sparkle and the Fireflies. And in it, Sparkle decides that she's going to go visit her grandparents. And she goes to visit her grandparents who are in North Carolina. And the thing that's fun about Sparkle is she's very magical.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get to the airport, there's a bird that's stuck up in the top of the roof inside the airport. And she says to her grandfather, well, I can't leave. The bird's going to die. He can't get out of the airport. Can't you speak to him? And we know straight away that Sparkle's got a great granddad because he says, look busy. And he starts to whisper to the bird.
Uh-huh.
He flies down and lands on Sparkle's shoulder. And he walks out of the airport with the bird on her shoulder. And they laugh, you know, they have a great time. And she's saying, why couldn't you just talk bird? And he said, well, you know, not everybody understands that. They might think you're a little peculiar. So, you know, I just do it quietly.
That's wonderful. I love it.
But as the story goes on, all these stories, they're children's stories, but each one is 80-plus pages. So they have quite a bit to them. But Sparkle in each story, the Sparkle will tell a story, and it's usually about connecting to some aspect of yourself in some way.
Mm.
And then her relative will tell a story. And in Sparkle and the Fireflies, her grandmother tells the story of the dragon. So
oh.
we got to the place in the dragon, we also met the dragon. But she, Sophia is the girl in that part of the story. Sophia is Sarah. Sophia's the grandmother. Sarah's the little girl. Sarah decides that she needs to go and meet the dragon so that she can rescue the world. So it's a kind of superheroine story.
Oh.
And she goes and sleeps in the forest, and the animals come around her, and she can speak. She like Sparkle, she can speak to the animals. And they eventually take her deep into the forest. to the elves, who aren't particularly excited that she's there. But they open the cave door to the dragon, and they say, "If you think you're the one, go in there and talk to the dragon." It's completely dark in there. And she can see little glimmering amethysts and something that might look like bones in there. And she walks in, and she says, "Hello, I am Sarah. I am the one. And I am everyone's friend, and I've come to befriend you." And she hears the dragon chuckle, and the dragon breathes fire on her. So it's a little bit of a metaphor. It's basically what happened to me the 3 days in the light, is you lose your persona for a while when you have these experiences. It's all of a sudden like, wow, what happened? Where did I go? So for a year, she's in the cave with the dragon. And she's learning how to, and she remakes herself. And she does befriend the dragon. And after the year, she comes back out glowing with messages for humanity. So that's the book that's coming out soon. There's a little bit more to it, but that's a little pricey.
Well, that should be quite a fun read.
And besides,
it's a full-color book. Every other page is a full-size illustration, and then there are illustrations on the written side. So it's all just beautiful color. They're absolutely exquisitely done. And,
they're stunning.
You know, it's almost unheard of that somebody, you know, invests so much energy and time and money in bringing a children's book into a full color like that. It's quite something.
I think it's rare these days. And Belle hand drew each drawing. I think each drawing took her a couple of days. She's been drawing for pretty much nonstop for 3 years. And she, every book that comes out is even more beautiful because our skills sets improve too. But it has taken enormous love and dedication to bring these out, so it's definitely part of our mission.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. And I hear great stories. I mean, it makes it, you know, you start to go, oh, gosh, this is just taking so much, and is anybody reading these? And then I'll get an email from somebody who was in jail. Like, one guy was in jail, a 35-year-old guy who was thrown in jail for stealing something, and he sat in jail, and he thought about Sparkle. The whole time he thought about Sparkle. And he said, you know, if Sparkle can connect to the light, I can too. And when he got out, he said he had decided to become sober and transform his life, and he wanted to live a completely new way. And I thought, my gosh, that's so sweet. And I get a lot of these messages, and that's why we keep doing them. It's because if they touch anyone, whatever age, however old the child is, it could be 9 or 109, then it makes it really worth it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And there's this whole workshop series. I have not talked about this. There's a whole workshop series we're getting ready to do. There's a teleconference on July 30th that I'm doing with Christina Huntley, who's from Harvard Divinity School. She's also completely fascinated with the goddess stories and how we live into the feminine, what that means. Not transcend out of body, but actually fully embody and live here as our wild, unique self.
Uh-huh.
So that teleconference, you can register it at livingthedivinefeminine.com or off my website, annkatesullivan.com, events. It's got a lot of people on it already. That it shows how many people really are fascinated by these stories. So I'll explain. In that one, I'll be sharing the story of Caesar in some depth and doing some work to help people connect into that archetype in themselves. And it's followed by two workshops. One's in Ojai. And that, actually, there's a TV show, Susan Allen, we're going to do. On her show, we'll be discussing the story of Dendran, who is the only woman to achieve the Grail. You hear of Lancelot and Bors and Percival and Galahad, but Dindran also achieved the Grail. And so I'm going to discuss her story. Then in Ojai, at Healing in America, where we met, we're going to do a deep dive there into with the goddess Danu, the great mother goddess, and learn really her ability to accept everything and everyone, and she's an amazing goddess. And then the last one of this series will be at Center of the Heart in Santa Barbara on August the 10th, and that will be on the sun goddesses. And the sun goddesses, I think I said earlier, aren't known in Greek and Roman mythology, but they are known in the Celtic world. And one of them is called Ain, which is where I get my nickname from.
Ah, right.
So
right.
We will be discussing the sun goddesses and how they help you find your own inner light and live from that place of light. So they're very meaningful, I think, in this time of shift and change that's happening on the earth.
Oh, it's so necessary to bring back the goddesses and to start to live that, you know, live from that, because the patriarchy has basically suppressed all of that information for thousands of years. So it's such wonderful information, and I love it when people are reconnecting to it and bringing it back to life, because, of course, they're still alive and they're still there. All you have to do is know, you know, have a little bit of information and make a little bit of effort. So
you can tap into it. And you know what's important? I don't know if I've said this, is that goddesses live. It doesn't matter what your gender is, whether you're male or female. People carry goddess archetypes, and it's really important, especially if you want to have a good relationship or you want to really love your children as they're growing up. It's important to have for men to have the goddess archetypes. Psychology, they call it the anima, you know, and it's important for women to have the goddess and the multiple god archetypes too, so that they, you know, they can call on Apollo or in this case, we have a whole array of Celtic gods, starting with the Dagda.
Well, I look forward to doing some.
That might be a different series, but. The one we're using right now is the goddess archetypes and how we live into this world. There's been so much focus on transcendence, and I had my 3 days in the light. It was amazing. But after you have your 3 days in the light, what happens?
Right.
You're back here.
You've got to live.
You're back here.
Here you are again.
Here we are. Oh, my gosh.
With all your
persona,
stuff.
A body and a name and... and a mission, and maybe there's not an accident there, you know.
You're right.
It's really this precious gift, and I think when we start to get that, we start to focus more on life and peace, and you know, helping all people around us blossom and thrive and live, and drop the competition and move into win-win and co-creation scenarios.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And tilting the scales, like the 100th monkey effect, from one of war to one of peaceful cohabitation and empowerment.
And so, that might really just be it. Just enough of us start practicing.
It could be. Would you repeat, we're almost at the end of the hour, and I wanted to make sure people got that website. You mentioned there was another website where you'll be doing the workshops.
If people go on to www.livingthedivinefeminine.com,
okay,
you can see the multiple events listed there, and you can also go on to either my Facebook page, which is also my name, or my website, which is www.annkatesullivan.com, and it's A-Y-N, annkatesullivan.com, events. You can find it at either place, and the teleconference is free. And the workshops are $35, and if you register in advance, they're $25.
Very good.
And there'll also be the free television show with Susan Allen, Evolution Revolution on Dindran, the Grail heroine coming up too.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to call you Anne because it's so much easier.
Okay.
Say, well, Anne, it's been a wonderful pleasure talking to you. You're just such a wonderful person, and I love your energy and I love what you're doing, and I'm so glad that we had a chance to do this show. So I just want to thank you for coming on tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope you'll come and explore some archetypes within you too.
I just might do that.
Okay.
The divine goddess is stirring in there.
You might meet somebody you never expected.
Oh, yes, that's true. Good point. All right. Thanks
okay.
a lot, Anne, and good
Thank
night.
Thank you.